Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Hello,
hello,
hello. Well, people, it is that time again, 8 p.m. on a fine, chilly night, Thursday evening. As always, I am Jerry, a.k.a. The Master. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Jeff the Joker, from the up north of Jersey. Two Jersey guys, J and J. We are two-thirds of the FSP crew show, and welcome to that show as we speak. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Jeff or me. Also have a chat room open. That's up for your convenience. Question, comment, statement. You can do all that in that chat room. What you put in is what you're going to get out of people. All right, all right, all right. There's been a lot of things going on since this past weekend. Green Bay Packers blew a 12-point lead with 5 minutes left in the NFC Championship game and went down in defeat in overtime to the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. Unbelievable. 55 minutes of football. Unbelievable. 60-something minutes of football. 55 minutes of what the Green Bay Packers were totally dominated in that game. And then who knows what happened. Well, you know what happened, but who knows what happened with the Green Bay Packers, and all of a sudden they're sitting at home wondering what the hell happened. And the Seattle Seahawks are on their way to Arizona, Phoenix specifically, to get prepared for the Super Bowl. But the big story, as Jeff and I will allude to, is the aftermath of the Colts and the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship. But before I get to that, because that's a lot, and that's probably going to cover majority of the show tonight, let's bring in my esteemed, we have a full cast here. Let's bring in my esteemed two co-hosts, Jeff the Joker from Jersey, and Mike Wright, a.k.a. the Bookie from the DMV area. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Jerry, how you doing? Hey, Black, what's up?
What's going on, fellas? Glad to be here finally.
Okay. Say that again?
I said supervisor's away, so I will play.
Okay, no problem. Anyway, guys, one of my favorite teams of all time, because for the most part, I think they're easy targets, because they do, seems like whenever you least expect it, they do something stupid, and it results in this. And the thing about this is this, and what I'm talking about is the underinflation of 12 balls, 11 out of the 12 balls that the New England Patriots were using. And on the other side of the Colts, every one of those balls that they were supposed to be inflated to a certain PSI was exactly what they were supposed to be. 11 out of 12 of the Patriots were not inflated to where what it's supposed to be per NFL rules. And all I got to say is this.
By the look of faces,
I'm telling you, by the look, if it looks like a duck, acts like a duck, and it is, in my opinion, a virtual duck, which the guy is saying, a cheetah. Now, we've been down this road before, guys, a few years ago, with the infamous taping of teams, which was illegal at the time. Now, at first, people were saying, this is not a big deal. This is something trivial. But it's an NFL rule, and this is not the first time that the Patriots have been down this road. And all three major networks led with this story tonight. ABC, NBC, and CBS. All three of them led with this story tonight.
Absolutely. Yes.
And it's unbelievable, but the simple fact is this. Excuse me. That in the game, Dequell Jackson intercepted a ball. As soon as he grabbed it, he realized it. That something was wrong with it, and he alerted the official. And from what I understand, at halftime, all the balls that the Patriots had they played with in the first half, and I didn't know this, but each team gets its own set of 12 footballs, and they're all supposed to be pumped up to a certain inflation, a PCI. And the Patriots were basically about 2 pounds short in their 11 out of the 12 that the officials checked at halftime. Now, and the Colts were perfect. Every one of the 12 balls were perfect. And Tom Brady and Bill Belichick both had press conferences today, and they pretty much threw up their hands and said, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. I have no idea. But let me play a clip from Tom Brady first, and this is a short clip. Maybe it can explain something, if anything.
So can you answer right now, is Tom Brady a cheater?
I don't believe so. I mean, I feel like I've always played within the rules. I would never do anything to break the rules. You know, I didn't alter the ball in any way. I have a process that I go through before every game where I go in and I pick the balls that I want to, the footballs that I want to use for the game. When I pick those footballs out, at that point, you know, to me, they're perfect. I don't want anyone touching the balls after that.
So he goes through a process and checks the balls. All right? That means the equipment manager gives him the balls, whatever amount of balls he goes through before he says, these are the balls I want. But you best believe that him and the equipment manager or managers or whoever have an understanding of what he likes in his balls. And I'm going to lay this out there. Now, the Baltimore Ravens supposedly alerted the Colts on what the hell was going on here. I think that's part of the reason why the balls were checked at halftime, besides what DeQuell Jackson found out. And I think this is not a isolated incident. Obviously, if the Baltimore felt something was going on, it was the last two games it had been going on. And let me throw this also out there before you guys comment. Now, the officials that ref these games handle these balls every down, all the time. And you can't tell me that they don't know if the ball's underinflated or overinflated. Because experience would tell you that if they handle the ball and if they're experienced officials, they know how the ball should feel. I'm going to put this out there in addition to whatever else I'm putting out there. I'm thinking this. Anytime it's a Patriots game, especially if it's at Foxborough, these officials knew that these balls were going to be underinflated. And I'm not accusing any particular official, but I think it was a understanding that anytime you went to Foxborough Stadium and the Patriots were playing whoever, that you were going to get a certain amount of underinflated ball compared to the opposition that's visiting. That's a lot to digest, what I got to tell you. I got two more clips, but I'm not going to play them yet. I want to get Black's reaction first before I jump to Jeff. Talk to me, Black.
In the words of a famous guy from Georgetown, we're talking about balls, man. I can't believe that I saw Mark Brunell almost shed a tear. Talking about balls, man. I can't believe the nightly news is leading off with the story about balls, man. Am I in an alternate universe? Did something happen? Was there a seismic shift between the sun, the moon, and stars? We're in some type of alternate universe now where 24-hour news cycles are leading off the stories about football. I don't understand what's going on here.
Okay. Jeff, your thoughts. I got a couple more clips.
Okay.
Set some light on what I've been saying.
I would beg to differ about the refs, because even though handling the football is an important part of their job, it's not a big part of their job. Now, NFL quarterback, he's handling the football every day. You know what I'm saying? It's a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, the refs are probably just handling the football, you know, a few times or more than a few times on a Sunday. So, and the thing is, and this is a relevant example, you know, in baseball you have the different size bats. This is how they make their living. A Major League Baseball player, if you ask him, you know, if he asks for a 31-ounce bat and you give him a 30, he'll say, hey, this feels light. You know what I'm saying? Because this is how they make their living. So for an NFL quarterback not to realize a ball is deflated, that's a crock. And the Patriots were fools for pulling that stunt, because you know, especially in a postseason game, someone makes a big play, they want to keep the ball, you know. And, hey, you play, you pay. And this is a prediction. And, you know, these shows get taped and archived. NFL's probably going to change how the footballs are handled and whatever. And the quarterbacks won't like it because it won't get scuffed up like they like and whatever. But I think because of that, in the future, more and more quarterbacks are going to start wearing gloves. And that's kind of similar to what happened to the wide receivers when they outlawed stick'em. That's when a lot of the wide receivers started wearing the gloves, and now it's very common. And I think a lot of quarterbacks are going to, you know, in the future are going to start wearing gloves because, you know, if if you don't scuff up the ball, they're too slippery. And it was kind of weird that, you know, the team is allowed, as long as it's properly inflated, they're allowed to doctor the ball however they want. But, you know, it's one of those things that's going to keep happening until there's a problem. But that's not going to be anymore.
Well, before I play these next two clips, one of America's favorite boys in football, Tom Brady, Mr. GQ, and Miss Bunchen's other half, addresses teammates about this Deflategate. And he expressed to his teammates behind closed doors, that fellow teammates, that he prefers the football a certain way. And if the certain way he likes his football is to be inflated to less than 12.5 PSI, and if Brady either deflated football to less than 12.5 PSI or asked someone else to deflate football to less than that, then he was breaking the rules. And I got to believe, and I think Black doesn't see really why this is so serious. Maybe you two do, Jeff, or either one of you. I don't know exactly how you guys feel. But he was breaking the NFL rules, okay? It's not like, and I started this show off earlier saying that this is not the first time we've been down the road. This is not the first time that Bill Belichick and company has said we'll do anything to win. And it seems like it's happened more than once, and I think this is a habit, obviously, because he said it in quotation marks. He likes his football a certain way, and a certain way is probably less than what the inflation rate is supposed to be of the football itself. Let me play this clip, and two clips, one from Bill Belichick, and the other one is a question that was asked a Hall of Famer, quarterback, and I'm not going to tell you until it's played, and I think Black knows who this is exactly, but we'll go from there. I'll lead off with Belichick, and then I'll come back with the other clip, Hall of Fame quarterback.
When I came in Monday morning, I was shocked to learn of the news reports about the footballs. I had no knowledge whatsoever of this situation until Monday morning. I obviously understand that each team has the opportunity to prepare the balls the way they want, give them to the officials, and the game officials either approve or disapprove the balls, and that really was the end of it for me. Until I learned a little bit more about this the last couple of days. Let me just say that my personal coaching philosophy, my mentality, has always been to make things as difficult as possible for players in practice. And so with regard to footballs, I'm sure that any current or past player of mine would tell you that the balls we practice with are as bad as they can be. Wet, sticky, cold, slippery, whatever, however bad we can make them, I make them. And any time that players complain about the quality of the balls, footballs, I make them worse, and that stops the complaint.
Bring in Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer, and Fox analyst Troy Aikman by phone. Troy, as a quarterback, does an underinflated ball make that big of a difference?
Well, I believe that it does, Mike. When you're talking about playing in inclement weather, talking about playing in the cold as it was, you know, in New England, that the balls get hard, they get tougher to handle. It's why some quarterbacks have reverted to using gloves late in the season. Tom Brady does not like wearing a glove on his throwing hand, and so to deflate the balls to some degree, it does help with gripping them and then being able to throw them more effectively. I will tell you that even going back to when I was playing, balls and how they were prepared going into a game was an issue. I remember having conversations with Jerry Jones, who was on the competition committee. Unlike college at that time, you could not prepare the balls during the week. Once I retired, they changed that rule, and now each team is able to bring, as you've discussed, they're able to bring their bag of balls whichever way the quarterback prefers to have them to play. But this was done after they had been inspected by the officials, and that is something I've never heard of.
And as you mentioned, Tom Brady does not like to wear a glove, and quarterbacks know. So what are the chances Brady didn't know those balls weren't inflated to regulation?
Well, I can't imagine anyone doing anything to the footballs without the quarterback having knowledge of it. I know, based on my experience and knowing how much effort went in to trying to get the balls as game ready and yet still fall within the guidelines of the NFL rules was challenging. And there's no way that anyone would have done anything to the game balls without discussing it with me first. And so I can't imagine that Tom Brady did not know that air had been taken out of the balls. My guess is it was his request. It's the way he preferred to throw with them, and that's why it was done.
Your reaction, Jeff? Belichick, and then
I've been hearing a lot of retired quarterbacks talk about it, and it sounds very implausible that Brady didn't know about it. It's very hard to believe.
How about you there, Black?
I'm still trying to believe that we spent 22 minutes talking about balls.
But this is a big story.
The media is making it a big story. This is not a big story. A big story is a ref dropping the flag on the field and picking it up. A big story is a guy catching the ball, taking three steps and saying that's not a catch. Deflating balls? That's not a story.
It is. It's a breaking of the rules. Jim Harbaugh said if the Patriots were letting air out the footballs, their offense used, and the Patriots were cheating. He told Sal Palantonio on ESPN that he is confident in the league will get to the bottom of its investigation into the Patriots tampering with game balls. I think the league is on it, and I think they're going to do whatever is right and proper. They're going to make sure that the game is played with integrity, it's played the right way, it's fair, and there's no unfair advantage for either side in any game. That's what the sport's all about. That's what's football all about. That's their obligation, and I'm confident that they're up to that responsibility.
What do you think the fire from the NFL would be?
Say what?
Sean Payton had bounty game, and he missed the whole season. This is deflate game. What do you think the fire would be?
Hey, they altered a part of the game. I'm not saying the outcome of the game, but a piece of what takes place in the game is the football, which is one I would say probably the main part, and they altered that against the rules.
Does Brady miss a half a season for this, or does he miss a whole season for tampering with the ball?
Let me ask you something there.
Because we all know that the evil empire, they've been up to underhand tricks for years. So this doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, I'm not saying it's surprising, but they got caught again doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. And this is not the first time. One of the things I said earlier beginning of the show. This is not the first time. So this is something else that they try to stretch the rules, or they eventually, in fact, broke the rules. And this is a second-time offender. So who's going to pay? Is it going to be Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or the organization? Or is it going to be some lackey that Tom Brady told him to do it, and he's going to be the one that falls on the sword to take the hit for the whole organization? I can't answer that. Roger Goodell's had a rough year, and now he's got this on his plate. They broke the rules, regardless of how minor you think these rules are. It's a rule, and it's a rule for a reason. And it's a rule so no one would have a advantage over a one team or the other. So Tom Brady likes to play better with underinflated balls that are less than what the prescribed 12.5 PSI that the NFL has. And it was, I think it was about 20% underinflated, about 2 pounds underinflated, which is, in my opinion, for a football, that's quite a bit. And it's an advantage that shouldn't take place in the game. Now, I'm saying the Colts probably wouldn't have, what is it, probably, it wouldn't have made a difference in the game as a score, but because they were completely dominated and mainly on the ground, but they broke a rule, and it's not the first time in this rodeo. That's what I'm saying. And somebody's got to pay for it, because this is the second time. I can't reiterate it enough. Second time around, and this is what you say, the evil empire. Everybody loves to hate the Patriots, and they set themselves up again to take a hit. Who's going to take the hit? Who knows? But somebody's going to take the hit in this. It could be a game suspension, could be several game suspension. It could affect the Super Bowl, or it could affect the next, the first few games of next season. Roger Goodell had his hands full with Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice, and everything that went with that. Now he's got this on his plate, and they're going to see what he's going to do with an organization that he's very close to, the owner, see what happens. This is going to be very interesting. You got, a week and a half, or less than a week, about 10 days before the Super Bowl goes off. Be very interesting if he's going to wait until after the Super Bowl to mete out the punishment, or he's going to do it before the Super Bowl. Which would be very convenient if he waited until after the Super Bowl for all the parties involved. That way he wouldn't have to think he would suspend anybody that would affect the game. I put a lot of stuff out there. What's your thoughts on it, Jeff, Dan Black?
No way are they going to do anything to take away from the Super Bowl, because this is the moneymaker. This is... For the NFL, that's New Year's Eve, 4th of July, and Christmas all rolled into one. And they have a convenient reason not to give punishment before the Super Bowl, because now all of a sudden Goodell is going to believe in due process, because last time he was in a hurry to discipline somebody was Ray Rice, and he messed that up beyond belief. And, you know, the thing is, there's going to be a lack of transparency, of course. And, I wouldn't be surprised if, an equipment manager or even a ball boy or somebody probably gets paid a few bucks to take the fall. And one of the mistakes Goodell made is, you know, trying to act like the NFL is law enforcement. They're not. They're totally not. And when he tries to act like it, he screws it up. And, people, and some of them not knowledgeable, criticized his predecessor, Paul Tagliabue. The perception was that he was soft. Well, you know what? There may have been that perception, but no one ever accused him of looking like a fool. Because he was still is a very intelligent man, and never looked like a buffoon. And I guess he knew, he wasn't a judge, he wasn't a jury, prosecuting attorney, anything like that. He was the commissioner, and he knew what his role was, and he didn't bite off more than he could chew. I don't think, and it's going to be crazy with the media, because Super Bowl, it's not just the regular sports media, it's every media in the country, and even from other countries, are going to converge on it. But, it's going to be unreal. But I don't think whatever penalty is going to be, it's they're not going to mess up the game, and it's that's not going to be. But I'm curious, and there really isn't any precedent, you know, if it's going to be it, suspension and draft pick money, what's the combination? And I'm very curious because this is whole new road. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just very new.
What's your thoughts, Black?
Man, can you imagine media row next week? Oh, my goodness. This thing is a fiasco, man. I don't think Goodell makes any moves until after the Super Bowl. You can't mess up the cash cow game knowing it's the Super Bowl. They're going to hype it, the Sherman and Brady rivalry, and then they'll get to all the rulings and things after the Super Bowl. But I would pay to be a fly on the wall on media day on all the week of the Super Bowl to see all the silly questions that will be asked. That's going to be priceless.
Okay. Well, I can definitely believe that this is going to be just like you said, Black and Jeff, that they're going to be talking about this quite a bit leading up to Super Bowl, where these two teams, one's doesn't say that much, does their job, and the other side, meaning the Seahawks, talk a lot, very carry their swag on their shoulder, and not afraid to let you know that what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, when we're going to do it. And one of them, believe it or not, Seahawks cornerback Jeremy Lane. I don't know if you guys heard about this. I still don't understand why these players, especially in big games, have the intelligence to talk about the other team and just want to give bulletin board material to another team, especially going into the Super Bowl. But this cornerback from the Seahawks, Jeremy Lane, made this statement that he doesn't believe Rob Gronkowski is that good. He said he's okay, but he does have a big body, and for what I've seen on tape, he don't like your hands being put on him. So if we put our hands on him and shake him up a little bit, he won't catch that many balls as he should. Now, like I said, two teams search for bulletin board material, but Jeremy Lane, you just jumped to the head of the class by giving some bulletin board material 9 to 10 days out, and I'm pretty sure some other Seahawk is going to give a little bit more to put another bulletin board material on that Patriot board just to get him that much more worked up. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Jeremy Lane, but what's your thoughts on this? Jeremy Lane saying that Rob Gronkowski is not that good. And if we get more or less what they're saying, if we get physical with him, he's not going to be as effective as he has historically been. Black.
Oh, man. Is he starting? Is he playing? Because the last I looked, Richard Sherman had a hurt shoulder. And Chancellor was also hurt as well. So I hope this dude is playing and can back up his words.
Okay. What about you, Jeff? What do you think about Jeremy Lane?
The bulletin board thing, I think that's a little overrated. Because you know what? I mean, Gronk's a great player. I mean, whether you like him or not. And he's going to bring it. As long as he's healthy, he's going to bring it every game. I don't think he needs the motivation. I mean, only thing is it might, you know, instigate him to talk a little if he gets the chance. But he's going to show up. He's going to play hard. And good chance he's going to be productive no matter what. It just I don't like the trash talk. It's just silly. It's nonsense. But it's funny when you first said
I thought you were going to talk about Jeremy Stevens, because it got overshadowed, but retired Seahawks tight end, he's in a little bit of trouble. I don't know if you heard about that.
What are you talking about, DUI or something like that?
Yeah, but it's worse than DUI. I was trying to read it before the show that he was driving his wife is big soccer star Hope Solo.
Oh yeah,
he was driving the Team USA soccer bus or van or whatever.
Oh my.
I mean, like I said, I'm not. Tried to read it real quick right before the show, but I mean that's nuts. I mean, the only thing worse than driving drunk is if you're getting paid to do a job as a driver and being drunk. I mean, I think it's suspicion. I don't know if they have the proof or whatever, but that's messed up. And I'll tell you that both of them got a lot of problems. But I don't want to convey any information incorrectly. But yeah, she's a hothead. She's got a temper issue. But I mean, if he did drive a vehicle with a lot of people under the influence, they got to lock him up for that. That's messed up.
Well, she got suspended from the U.S. soccer team for 30 days for. Allowing her husband, where she was on a bus too, or a vehicle, to drive a DUI, and then arguing with the police after they stopped the vehicle and was arresting her husband on a DUI. She was acting belligerent, and the officers and recorded the officers on her cell phone. So she saw that what was happening with her husband, she got a little belligerent, and I guess she just came off a dismissal of charges from domestic violence case, and now she turns around and does something like this. So you're right, both these this couple has some issues. Hope has, I think, more than probably Jeremy Stevens. Maybe that's why he was drinking, because of how crazy his wife is. Anyway, stay tuned, because this is not the first or last you'll hear the story. So Hope Solo, get your act together. Jeremy Stevens, you also get your act together, and we have to wait and see what happens. That's pretty wild. One of the other things I want to talk about, and this is Patriots related, because the fact is that it is a former coach of the Patriots, and he's going from the tight ends coach to he's going from one side of the ball to the other side of the ball, and he was the one that eventually blew the whistle on the Patriots. I'm talking about the former coach of the Jets and the Browns, Eric Mangini, who now is going to be the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. And last year, he was the tight ends coach. Now, I don't know how you go from the tight ends coach on one team, even though his forte is the offensive side of the ball, that he goes to the defensive coordinator at the in the 49ers organization. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about this, but it's just ironic that Eric Mangini is when he was so obscure. At one point, he was an analyst or talking head on ESPN and some sports shows. Now he's gotten himself back into the NFL. He was a positions coach. Now he's a defensive coordinator. He's trying to work his way back, it looks like, to eventually get a head coaching job somewhere. Being a defensive coordinator, he's just one step away. What's your thoughts? Eric Mangini fighting his way back on the 49ers. Black.
I remember his nickname at one point was Attic Mind Genius, so I have no problems with him coming back. I'm glad he didn't take the Redskins job because that would have been an upgrade over the guy that they hired. But it's good to see him back in the league doing the thing that he likes to do. Good
okay.
Whistleblower from the evil empire as well. Good whistleblower.
talk to me, Jeff.
I have heard of position coaches switching from offense to defense, but I haven't heard of someone being promoted to coordinator from the other side of the ball. And mm-hmm. a few years ago, when Andy Reid was head coach of the Eagles, he switched one of his position coaches from one side of the ball to the other. I think it was offensive line to defensive line or vice versa. And supposedly it made a lot of sense because he knew a lot about the other position. And also I think he had a theory about cross training, but that wasn't a coordinator. And I've noticed a lot of coaches who've done very well in the NFL played both sides. Tony Dungy, you know, he played quarterback in college and he played defensive back in the NFL, but he was the emergency quarterback for Pittsburgh. That's why I think he's the last guy to throw an interception and catch an interception in the same game. And this goes back to Tom Landry. Tom Landry, way back as a player, he played quarterback in college with the Giants. He played defensive back and punted, and he was the emergency quarterback. There's other Ray Rhodes. Ray Rhodes started his career with the Giants as wide receiver, got switched to defensive back, and he did very well in coaching. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying he was an excellent coach. To piggyback on your point.
Right. So, but the thing is that switching from one side of the ball to the other, that's not that odd, but to coordinator does sound a little odd, I'll tell you. The new 49ers head coach, at first I liked to hire, you know, promote from within. He's been with the organization a long time. He did have some head coaching experience in NFL Europe. And then he mumbles and grunts through his one of his first interviews. It's like, huh? I could have done better. I mean, I'm not saying I would have done great, but at least I could have faked it a little better. But I guess he's got time to figure it out. But he sure is heck didn't come across as a head coach.
Okay.
Well, that has to be the struggle interview of the year. That's one of my nominees right there. And
well,
yeah,
what?
I said he had the struggle interview of the year, and the year just started.
Well, I wasn't fortunate or unfortunate, whatever point of view you want to say, to see that interview. Vic Fangio.
You were fortunate.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you remember a interview we had years back with another Vic?
On the same level.
Okay. Unfortunately, that Vic happens to be
right. That's your homework for the night. After we get off the show, you watch the interview. Tell me what you got from it. You tell me a joke of what you took away from that interview.
Okay, if I can find it, I'll definitely.
It's definitely on YouTube.
Okay, I'll definitely get off the air, and that'd be the first thing I do. And I'm dead serious. That's the first thing I'll do is get the interview of Vic Fangio up it and see how I feel about it. And you tell me as long the lines of a Victor Page. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Wow. I know that if that's the case, and he gets paid a few million dollars to be the head coach of a NFL team. Good luck, 49ers. Oh, my. Okay. Speaking of that, or speaking of a defensive-minded coach, and speaking of what goes around comes around, and I think I gave it away when I said that, we have a defensive coach that went to a few teams in a defensive coordinator role, and at one point he was a head coach. And now he makes a return trip. He was a defensive coordinator on the one of the Giants, if not both of them, Super Bowl teams recently. And now he returns back. And I want to get the Giant fans' reaction to Steve Spagnuolo coming back as defensive coordinator of the New York Giants. And what type of job that you'll think he'll do the second time around. Talk to me, Jeff.
I'm glad you went to me first. I assume it's because I'm the Giant fan.
Yes.
Actually, the two Giant Super Bowl victories over the Cheaters, so you know you're good when you beat the Cheaters, you know?
yeah.
And I heard, you know, and Belichick isn't just a cheater. He's a got bone, you know, and, you know, that loosely translated from Italian. I'm not Italian, but I was the only Jewish kid in an Italian town. I ran all the baseball card action on that playground. You know, Gavone right. is like someone with no class, you know, or, you know, fool, right. Donkey or something. And I heard that Belichick wouldn't even shake Coughlin's hand after that game, which supposedly they're friendly. I don't think they're close personal friends, but they, you know, they get along supposedly, and they worked well together when they were both on Parcells' staff. So the first time they beat the Cheaters, Spagnuolo was the coordinator, and then he left to be head coach at the Rams, which you can't blame him because it's a promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And for the second time they beat the Cheaters, it was Perry Fuel. That's right.
Right.
And
right.
unfortunately, when a defensive unit has struggled as mightily as the Giants has the past couple of years, usually the coordinator, you know, becomes a scapegoat. And, you know, Fuel was respected in Buffalo. He was the interim head coach there for a while. And with all due respect, Coughlin's in his late 60s, so I think his coordinators are perceived as prospects. And I remember thinking this year, but McAdoo, the offensive coordinator, I'm thinking, I can't imagine this guy as a head coach. So, but unfortunately for Fuel, his unit underperformed again. I'm glad they brought back Spagnuolo. And if they could improve, he has to have a good shot at becoming head coach, I think. Because, I don't know, I mean, he left on good terms and whatever, and a lot of coaches in the NFL do better their second job, so hopefully the defense will improve, and I think he's a good prospect for next head coach of the Giants.
Talk me, Black.
Well, good move by the Giants. I'm thinking they should just go ahead and promote Spags now. Let Coughlin go ahead and lay out the pasture, man. Just the sand over the reins right now.
Well, do you think that the defense is going to improve because of the reemergence of Steve Spagnuolo as the defensive coordinator? Because when he was a defensive coordinator, with the Saints, they were absolutely horrible. They were horrible with Rob Ryan this past year, but when he had them, they were real bad. I mean, they were probably one of the worst, if not the worst, defense in the whole league. You think he's going to turn it around? The Giants with the pieces the Giants have now?
Yeah, it's all about the pieces they get. I mean, there's no coach can be successful with terrible talent. That's why you saw a lot of guys leave when they came in the interview for the Redskins job. It was like, that defense there is just too much of a rebuild, and guys just interviewed and left. So I don't know. They have a good draft. They get a couple of good draft picks to go along with the young talent they have there. You know, a lot of their defensive ends fell off this season. So we'll see what happens. I definitely like the hire.
All right. Let's change gears here for a minute, because
before you change gears, I know both of you guys are baseball fans, and I know we have 10 minutes left in the show. And I've been scratching my head about this. So I want to pick both of your minds. What do you think about this signing of Scherzer to my Nationals?
Blackie, you must have been reading my mind. You must have been reading my mind, because the change of subject was specifically on Max Scherzer, getting signed to a 7-year, $210 million contract to the Washington Nationals.
I didn't think they could spend that type of money, but apparently they can.
Well, I'm reading it now. It says that $210 million is deferred through 2028, making the present-day value of the contract slightly less than the total value. So I don't know what that exactly entails, but the whole contract, which in baseball is guaranteed regardless of when he's supposed to get it, it's $210 million for 7 years. I mean, pitching staff.
Listen to the kicker. It's spread out over 14 years.
Okay. I understand that. But that means he's a millionaire for 14 years. If he doesn't pitch an inning in Washington, if he gets hurt, God forbid, in spring training and ruptures his pitching elbow or his rotator cuff, and can't pitch another inning at all, he gets that money. I think it's, in my opinion, I think it's a very good signing. Now you have to look at what you guys got in your on your team as in pitching staff. You got Doug Fister, Max Scherzer, you got Gio Gonzalez, Steven Strasburg, Ryan Zimmerman. I'm trying to think of all the pitchers off the top of my head.
You named the majority, because I was pissed earlier in the week when we let one of the best arms we had, Clipper, go for this older shortstop. After we touch on Scherzer, I want y'all to touch on that as well, because I didn't like that deal one bit.
You didn't like Scherzer at all?
No. The trade we made before we signed Scherzer, we traded Clipper for this either shortstop or second baseman. I forgot the guy's name. But we got rid of Clipper for that. I didn't like us moving Clipper.
You talking about Escobar?
Yeah.
You now Escobar. You needed to shore up your second baseman. You needed to shore up your middle infielder, and you had pitching. You had pitching that you could afford to give away. You got good relief pitchers, and you got a good closer, and so you could afford to let Clifford go to shore up the middle of your infield. It's one pitcher for an everyday player. If it was one-to-one, and I'm thinking that's what it was. I'm thinking it's a good trade, because you're not giving up any of your major pitching. You're giving up a relief pitcher or a second baseman. I think it's a good deal. What about you, Jeff? What's your thoughts on Scherzer coming to the Nationals and what Black was talking about Yunel Escobar, second baseman for a relief pitcher?
Well, Black, I'm not very knowledgeable about baseball. I was a big fan growing up, but that was a long time ago. Know a little bit about the New York teams, watch once in a while, but can't stand baseball.
Okay.
You know, it's mostly because of the pace of play, but also all these silly unwritten rules and whatever, and just really hard for me to get into baseball.
All right. Well, he's a 276 lifetime hitter, Black. So he's a decent hitter, and he's a good second baseman. He's been around for a while, so it's not like he's not an old guy. I mean, young guy. He's 32. We'll be 34. I mean, 33 in November. So. I think it's a good pull. You probably like Clifford and didn't want to give him up, but it's a relief pitcher. It's not like it's a one of your starting arms. So to get this guy to be your starting second baseman, an everyday player, like I said before, I think this is a good move. What's your thoughts on this? You didn't like this or what?
I love Clifford, man. I love Clifford. I love him for the clubhouse. I love this relief pitcher. This guy, I'm not too fond of the guy we had coming in. If they were going to move anybody, they could have moved Zimmerman. What they're saying, they might not re-sign after next season. I don't know why they didn't just do that.
Well, doesn't Zimmerman have does he have health issues like a back or something like that that he's been struggling with?
I believe so, but I'm sure somebody will talk today.
Okay. All right. Well, it is what it is. You know, I wanted to also jump back on this, and before I wanted to go to baseball, I did want to talk about another hire in New York. It happened to be the GM and the head football coach, which I think is a good hire on paper. You have to wait and see because both these guys are new to their position. One of them was the head of college scouts for my Houston Texans, and the other one was a defensive coordinator with the Arizona Cardinals. They come back. They come from two decent organizations with solid coaching staff in the Cardinals and a solid front office in the Texans. I'm talking about Mike McGanahan, if I probably butchered his name, and Todd Bowles being a GM and head coach of the New York Football Jets. What's your thoughts on that, Jeff?
I mean, Bowles, everybody, I think, agrees that he's a good hire. Very highly regarded from New Jersey, which is cool. Maybe might not be a good combination, head coach and GM, because both are new to that those positions, but also a notable hire, Chan Gailey is offensive coordinator because Bowles is a defensive coach. His mm-hmm. coordinator is a very important hire. They couldn't get somebody better than Chan Gailey.
Yeah. Well, I understand what you're saying, but. I think the Jets are going to have an up-tempo offense and try to get more infusion of more plays and more dynamic plays. And he's big on the running game. And from what I understand, if along with these two hires, that C.J. Spiller, when Gailey was the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, if I'm not mistaken, C.J. Spiller excelled when Gailey was coaching in Buffalo. So C.J. Spiller, believe it or not, is a free agent, and it's a possibility that the Jets are in need of a running back, that he may make a move from upstate New York down to Florham Park. I don't know if any of you guys heard that, or saw it on the net, but I happened to see it about less than a week ago. That, in fact, over the weekend, if I think I saw that. Your thoughts on that? C.J. Spiller moving over to the Jets and having a more dynamic running game to help Geno Smith or whoever may be the quarterback of the Jets come in 2015. Talk to me. Jeff.
If C.J. Spiller had his best year with Gailey as head coach, maybe they should bring the trainer who's working in Buffalo that year. Because maybe, no disrespect to Spiller. When healthy, he's an excellent back, but that's the issue with him. And, Perry Fuel just gets shown the door in New York. At the end of the year, everybody's talking about firing Conflin. I said, forget about firing Conflin. Fire the medical staff, because whatever they're doing, it's not working. So, I'm not feeling it, man.
Okay. What's your thought there, Black?
Oh, I agree. I'm 100% agreeing with my man, Jeff.
Okay. All right, well, we come to the end of the show. We're in overtime right now. And I just wanted to give it to you, Black, for your closing remarks, and then we'll pass it off to Jeff before we get out of here.
All right. I need you and Joker. I mean, I don't really believe in this, but I'm just going to give it a shot this year and try it. Hopefully you and Joker can hit the jackpot along with me, and we can just tone it up and go holler at our boy Prokhorov. I mean, didn't he just buy the Brooklyn Nets?
Yeah,
already?
He did.
So let's put our dollars to work and pony up some money and go get this franchise. Proud real estate right there in Brooklyn.
All right. What about you, Jeff?
Wow. Well, thought we'd be talking about Super Bowl pools and proposition bets and postseason fantasy leagues, but boy, I'll tell you, by next Thursday, we are going to be so sick and tired of Deflategate or whatever, and they got to rename that. And I'm tired of every scandal becoming gate, and I'm also tired of Belichick. That's old. But one of my buddies refers to him as Bogus Billy. I think that or something like that. I think that's gonna be his new nickname.
Bogus Billy? Wow.
Yeah, my buddy Joe came up with that. I like it. It's fresh.
That is. Bogus Billy. Wow. I love it. All right. Well, with that note, I want to thank whoever's been listening. Thank you for listening. For those who catch us in the archives, thank you for listening to the show. Tune in next week, same time, same spot. We'll be 4 days away from the Super Bowl come Thursday night. We'll be hot and heavy on whatever's been taking place from now until Thursday night next week. I want to thank my two co-hosts for joining me tonight. I want to have you guys that are listening enjoy the weekend. And tune in 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, where the FSB show, where I'll be the host and Vic will be the co-host, will be on air and talking about probably Deflategate or Bogus Billy or whatever else Mr. FSB wants to talk about. And on Sunday, the master plan, I'll be talking about the week in sports. You never know what I'm going to be talking about on Sunday, but it'll be sports related. That'll be on 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday. That's the master plan where I host that show. Anyway, with all that being said,
I need you guys to hit the grocery store too, man. I understand the big nor'easter is coming you guys' way. Might be a foot of snow, man.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. It's supposed to be a nice one coming, I think, starting Friday night or early Saturday morning. And hopefully, depending on where you live, it's how hard you get hit. Jeff may be in trouble because he's closer to New York than I am. I'm more closer to the coast and in the central part of the state. So I may be safe and not hit that bad. But, Jeff, you be safe. Hopefully, both of us don't get hit that hard, and we'll be able to get through it with of little consequence. With that being said, see you all next week. Same time, same space, out.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew.